This is Children's Health Checkup, where we answer parents' most common questions about raising healthy and happy kids. I'm Evo Terra. Today's topic, what parents need to know about bird flu, where I'll be joined by Dr. Jeffrey Kahn, Director of Infectious Diseases at Children's Health and Professor at UT Southwestern. Together, we'll cut through some of the myths and misconceptions and give you the answers you need so your family can feel safe. Dr. Kahn, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure.
What exactly is bird flu, and what sets it apart from the seasonal flu that we deal with each year?
So bird flu is an influenza virus, very much like the influenza virus that circulates in humans every year, that almost exclusively, until recently, circulates in animals, and most of those animals being birds. And the first documented identification of bird flu was actually in the late 1950s in Europe. And it's been known that this virus can spread through both wild fowl and also domesticated birds like chickens. And it causes quite a bit of trouble in farming communities because it causes pretty severe disease in chickens and duck and other waterfowl. And that's something that's been known for quite some time. The bird flu, which technically speaking is called H5N1, really sort of hit the radar of the medical community back in the 1990s. There was a small outbreak in Hong Kong. There were about 18 cases, and of those 18 cases, six people died. So it does speak that this could be a very dangerous virus. Fortunately, in that outbreak, along with other outbreaks, there has been limited or no data to support human-to-human transmission. In other words, the people who were getting the bird flu got it from an animal, and they did not pass it on to the contacts, their health cell contacts, or other contacts they had. The other comment I should make here is that in sort of scientific terms, we call this highly pathogenic avian influenza. The highly pathogenic part actually refers to the disease caused in birds, not necessarily the disease caused in humans. So this virus has been circulating for quite some time, and there have been other outbreaks, and it's been identified in other continents. And what has really alarmed the medical community now, and it's just about a year ago now, is that it started showing up in cattle. So influenza viruses have this nasty habit of being able to jump from species to species. And not only did it jump to cattle, it seemed to be spread among cattle. And in fact, there have been many outbreaks. Many states have documented cases of the bird flu in cows. And there have been a number of human infections. Fortunately, most of them fairly mild. It's also, this bird flu has gotten into other animals. It seems to be very pathogenic in cats. It's something that we have to keep our eye on. And of course, we have yearly epidemics of flu. And so we deal with that. But influenza viruses, and there are a whole lot of them out there, they infect a variety of different species, different mammals. And they have this property where they can sort of recombine or resort and new viruses come out. So an example of this would be back in 2009 when we had the H1N1 outbreak. That virus, it was part human virus, part avian virus, and part swine virus. And that took a foothold in the human population and again spread through the world. And that's the virus that we deal with now on a yearly basis. So that's a sort of a long-winded answer to your question, but this is something that's been on our minds and had been on the radar for quite some time. And now there's growing concern just because this virus is out there, it's spreading among cattle and other animals. The big question is, will it mutate to the point where not only does it infect a human, but that human can infect other humans? And then once that happens, everything changes.
Yeah, that would be a total game changer. And with that much in the population, I could see how that's a definite concern for us today. Let's talk about symptoms. What are the symptoms when humans are contracting the bird flu currently?
Well, fortunately, I should say that most of the symptoms have been pretty mild. Curiously, one of the things that first came up was conjunctivitis or inflammation of the whites of the eyes. And that was in one of the initial reports of somebody who had sort of mild flu symptoms, but very red eyes. And that's been documented a few other times. But for the most part, these are mild symptoms. And so that suggests that the virus really hasn't adapted to the human host all that well. There is one documented death due to the bird flu in a individual who I think was in his 60s who had underlying medical problems. So it's sort of tough to draw conclusions from a single case. But for the most part, they're mild symptoms, at least as of now.
Okay, so we've got mild symptoms, and it's really rare, from what you're saying, for humans to contract this anyhow, and we're not spreading it human to human. So in the rare cases when this does happen, how is it treated? Is it treated?
Well, fortunately, we do have antivirals for influenza, and if the case is diagnosed in a timely manner, we can try those. We do know that the virus should be susceptible to these antiviral agents that we have that we use for seasonal flu. But in most cases, the symptoms are mild, so the individual may not come to medical attention. The testing that we have will show that this is influenza A, and there are a variety of different types of influenza A, one of them being H5N1. So if you go to a local lab or even to a hospital lab, it will identify it as influenza A, and we may not know if it's bird flu or not. There are obviously efforts now going on to try to do a little bit more of an investigation here. So I suspect there may be a lot of other cases out there that we never heard of, never came to medical attention. And in fact, there was a report from the CDC just this past week of veterinarians who they just drew blood from to see if their blood showed any evidence of infection with bird flu, and they were positive, although they never had any disease. So it may be under the radar, looking under the radar right now, that it's spreading, or at least more people are infected, but fortunately, mild or no disease.
Well, that is very good news. But I know that parents still worry about this, especially with the things we're learning about bird flu right now. Can we get it from chickens? Can we get it from the eggs that they lay? Can we get it from beef? Can we get it from drinking milk? I'll ask you those questions. How worried should we be?
So right now, if you don't have direct contact with animals, particularly birds, chickens, or cattle, then the risk is really quite low. As far as the things that we get from these animals, eggs, meats, and so on, fortunately, the virus is very susceptible or sensitive to heat. So if you cook your eggs, then there shouldn't be any problem. For milk, for example, most milk that you buy at the supermarket is pasteurized. That kills the virus. So the recommendations now are certainly to stay away from raw milk. For sure, if there's evidence of bird flu in the state or the local community that you're in where you're getting your raw milk, I would strongly suggest that you don't do that. But right now, the risk for the greater population is very low.
You mentioned cats are getting it, and I had heard something about that we think they're getting it from exposure to wild birds. Any truth to that?
It could be from wild birds. There have been a number of cats that have died on farms, and it could be because they're drinking the milk that's coming from the cows. And the milk contains the virus, and that's how they're getting infected.
Okay, so let's talk about risk avoidance. I think that's a smart thing for all families to do. What should we be doing with us as parents, our children, so that we can reduce the risk of exposure, both at home and in the communities?
Right now, the greatest risk for getting infected with the bird flu is being exposed to infected cattle and, of course, infected birds or an infected cat, although that's probably a very small number. So that's right now the greatest risk. And then consuming raw milk from an infected cow would be a risk. If you're consuming pasteurized milk and if you're eating cooked eggs and cooked chicken or beef, then the risks are really very, very low. I wouldn't change my dietary habits unless I was one who would be consuming raw milk. Other than that, the things that we're talking about, we typically cook, and therefore the risk is very low.
For parents that live in rural areas or have cattle, beef, as quite oftentimes happens in the area, obviously there's a different set of concerns they have to go through. Do you have advice for them?
Well, there's active surveillance in some areas looking for the presence of the virus. So clearly, if there's active surveillance in the area that you happen to be in, if you're a farmer and your cattle, your herd, or your animals have been tested and there's no evidence, then just have to keep an eye out for if your cattle are getting sick, because that was actually one of the first clues that the cattle were getting sick. They weren't producing as much milk. So they were actually getting sick with the virus, probably in sort of rough terms, that the same flu-like illness that we may experience. We'd feel bad for a couple of days. We don't eat very much, but they recover. So if you're in the agricultural community and you're noticing this about your animals, then you may want to think about getting an investigation performed to see if there's flu in your herd.
Every time there's a new virus that's coming around, lots of news is made, lots of questions that come around. So I just want to be very clear. For parents out there that are worried about the bird flu, what do you say to them? How can you assuage their fears?
So right now, as I mentioned, the risk is very low that most children will get exposed to, and few of them will get infected with the bird flu. I don't think that's a high-risk situation. There's obviously a lot of surveillance going on right now and a lot of attention being paid to this flu virus. And my level of worry would increase significantly if there was human-to-human transmission that was ongoing. Occasionally, we'll come across a report, at least earlier with H5N1, there was one report years ago. There may have been human-to-human transmission of a caretaker, of an adult who got sick, who also got sick. Well, that was probably a one-off if it was true. But if there's sustained spread of this virus, that's when I would be concerned. But right now, we have no evidence of that. The other thing to comment on is that the disease tends to be mild. Now, it may be mild because the virus hasn't quite adapted to the human host yet. And whether that's going to happen, we don't know. So right now, the fact that it's mostly mild disease or asymptomatic disease, there's probably a lot of that that we don't even know about, and no human-to-human transmission. So for parents, I would say right now, nothing to worry about, or very, very little to worry about, but keep your eyes open, watch the news reports, and see what's coming out of the CDC.
Yeah. And is that the right answer, to stay informed, follow what the CDC is saying?
Absolutely. I should say that the question is, well, let's think about worst-case scenarios. Worst case scenario is that this virus mutates, and influenza viruses are known to mutate. That's why we have to get a new flu vaccine every year. The flu virus that circulated last year has mutated, so that flu vaccine is no longer effective or less effective. This is really the only virus where we come up with a new vaccine every year. For the most part, the measles vaccine is the same one we've used for decades. We don't have to redo it. So we know that the virus may mutate and then, of course, then be able to be transmitted from human to human and become more pathogenic. But the good news is that we know how to deal with influenza. We have a long history of dealing with influenza. We have vaccines. We know how to make vaccines. We know how to make safe vaccines. We know how to make vaccines that are intranasal. Some are shots. The components are different. We know that they're effective if the match is good between the vaccine and the virus that's circulating. We have antivirals that work very well. So unlike COVID, where we really never experienced, the medical community at least, never experienced an outbreak with a new coronavirus. Who ever heard of coronaviruses before COVID, right? But for flu, we know our foe, and it could be a very dangerous foe. If the tide changes and this becomes a serious problem, I know there are companies and governments working on the H5N1 vaccine, which, by the way, not only could be used for humans, but maybe for cattle as well. And we have antivirals. So if we prepared properly, then we should be able to limit the adverse outcomes of a H5N1 outbreak.
Yeah, it definitely sounds that way. Well, great information. We will definitely stay tuned. Everyone is concerned, and rightfully so, but also I appreciate you coming on and helping us weigh some of the fears and letting us know that we're well prepared to handle this if it gets bigger, and we will continue to stay informed. Dr. Khan, thank you very much for your information today.
It was my pleasure.
Please visit childrens.com/birdflu for more up-to-date information. And thank you for listening to Children's Health Checkup. If you found this episode helpful, please rate and review or share the episode. And please follow Children's Health on your social channels. Thanks for listening.